Hello there, and welcome to my podcast. I'm Connie. I'm a certified nutritionist, personal trainer, busy mom, and I live on a small hobby farm. I'm a former bodybuilder, and I currently have found a love for endurance sports. But I'm not your typical athlete. I believe there are many more contributors to athletic performance and overall health, and that we as a population might be doing it wrong. You won't see me pounding goos or chicken and rice, but you will see me in the pursuit to fuel not only athletic performance, but also balance it with optimal health. This is not just a podcast for athletes. Many people that fall into the health scene get there for a reason. I found myself in suboptimal states at multiple times in my life, and it has really sparked my passion for metabolic and systemic health. I'm constantly a student of what I love, and now I hope to help others by bringing quality guests to the show to share their opinions and resources to hopefully help you formulate strategies to help you crack your health code. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode. I'm so excited that you have decided to spend some of your time with me today. It really is an honor that you guys listen to these podcasts and share them with your friends. I really appreciate it because I'm trying to get this information out there to hopefully help others, because you never know what you're going to say that could be life-changing for somebody, and that is my biggest goal with this podcast. So I'm super thankful that you're spending your time with me. Today, I'm pretty lucky. I have a fellow podcaster joining me on the episode. His name is Brian Grin. I was a guest on his podcast several months back, and we really hit it off. And so today I decided to have him join me on my episode to share some of his experiences with intermittent fasting. So he's a personal trainer, health coach, offers some wonderful challenges online, including a 21-day fasting challenge. And so today he's going to educate us on his information about intermittent fasting. So before we get going, make sure if you like this episode that you hit the pause button real quick and go leave me a review. Those reviews are so important, and I cannot tell you how important they are. They help me get this information out to people. And the way things work is if you don't have reviews, the algorithms don't show your podcast up, and then this can't get out there to other people. So don't be greedy, guys. I want to share this podcast with everyone, not just you. Please go leave me a written review or at least some stars. I can't tell you how thankful that I am when you do that, because it really makes an immense difference. So anyway, before we dive into the podcast, I just want to let you guys know that I still have some wonderful challenges out there, including some beginner challenges that will be starting in March here. So I'm really looking forward to those. And if you guys want to pop on over to my website at ConnieNightingale.com, I can get you signed up and we can start this health journey together. So totally looking forward to that. And if you've listened to some of my past episodes, I think over the last three, you would know that I have become a consultant for Beauty Counter. Now, I know this seems taboo with all the multi-level marketing stuff, but they're not multi-level marketing, but I feel like there's a stigma there. Anyways, I had been recommending all of their products to my clients and my friends, and then I had the podcast with Amy Carlson where we talked about toxins in your home, and she brought them up as one of the top three beauty companies out there that are clean. So I felt like that was an omen and that it was telling me I did need to jump on board with their services and become a Beauty Counter representative. So with that being said, if you guys ever have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. You can send me a message via my website, which is ConnieNightingale.com. You can friend me on Instagram. I would love that. Shoot me a DM and we can chat about anything, really. It doesn't have to be about makeup. This is not just about makeup. This is about overall health, and I love to answer questions. So please feel free. Reach out to me. I would love to chat. If you're interested in Beauty Counter products, you can head on over to www.beautycounter.com/ConnieNightingale. Find some great products. I highly recommend that you try the tinted moisturizer. I know it's been a game changer for me because I'm not a huge fan of wearing a bunch of makeup. Actually, more than likely, you probably see me with no makeup on most of the time, and most people are used to that. But the tinted moisturizer is great. You put it on, it gives you very light coverage and just enough to kind of cover those little blemishes that you have while also moisturizing. So that has definitely been a favorite of mine. Anyway, Without further ado and me babbling on about all of these things, I would like to introduce to you Brian Grin. Hey, Brian, welcome to this show. It's been a little bit since we've talked. I know I recently was on your podcast. We recorded, I don't know, several months ago, and we hit it off, and we have a lot of the same ideas and thought processes on things. So I thought it was only fitting that I get you back on the show and we get you to talk about your deal.
Yeah, Connie. Well, thanks for having me on. I'm excited and enjoyed you on my podcast. So I'm glad I'm on yours now.
So the stars aligned. It's funny how we all fall into these same circles and we start learning from each other. And we just develop this network of people that can all get out there and get health information out into the world where people can hopefully make changes in their own life. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably been the biggest bonus with doing podcasting is just meeting like-minded individuals and just great for networking and learning, you know, so I've enjoyed the whole process.
That's awesome. So today you're going to talk to us a little bit about fasting. That's your area of expertise in particular, and you do talk about it a lot. And so I haven't had anyone really on the show to get real in deep into it, dive deep into it. And so I'm hoping that you can kind of help inform my listeners today on some fasting techniques and why it's important and how it can help them out in their overall health journey.
Yeah, for sure. It's something I've become passionate about. And if you probably asked me 7-8 years ago, I'd be like, oh, you know, I never really did it. So it sort of evolved over time. And I was influenced by actually a client of mine who got into fasting and had great results. I was like, wow, there's something to this. And this was probably 6-7 years ago. And yeah, I just ran with it, started doing it myself and then researching and reading books. And now it's getting a little more mainstream, which is always good.
I love that. And the funny thing is like, I'm kind of in the same camp as you where it's like, you know, if you would have told me 5 years ago that I was into fasting, I would have been like, are you freaking kidding? You lose muscle when that happens. I had such a bro mentality, you know, and it's just crazy like to look back at your life and see the things that you learn along the way. And I mean, it's an insane thing, especially now, because I used to think that also it was an excuse for people to starve themselves. And so I was kind of against it in that sense. But now I see exactly the benefits of it. And I was just explaining to a client the other day about it. I said, you're not cutting a meal. You're still maintaining the same caloric intake, but you're actually just rolling that into like the next meal. So she was like, oh, I get it now. This is cool. So
yeah, sometimes when you frame things a certain way and you're like, oh, that makes sense. It's, you know, if you told me I would skip breakfast now, like I used to love, you know, breakfast was my big meal back in the day. But yeah, now I don't even think about it. It's like I don't want breakfast because it'll just slow me down. And you can always, you know, if you love breakfast foods, you could do that for dinner. So
yeah, there you go. That's a great idea, actually. I never even thought of that. So that's lovely. So let's kind of dive into this. First of all, what is fasting? Can you kind of break it down? And then why is it beneficial for us to implement it into our routines?
Yeah, so fasting, simply put, is just a voluntary abstinence of food, and essentially, so any type of calories. And yeah, like it's simply put, you know, people ask me, well, what can they have on a fast? I mean, I like to keep it simple and say, like, you can have everything but, you know, tea or some black coffee. So yeah, fasting is just a voluntary thing. It's something that it's not it's not starvation. It's just abstaining from food for a period of time. And what was the second part of your question?
Was how can people benefit from it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that it's one of those things that can, I like to use it as a tool. It doesn't need to be done. I mean, I like to do it every day, but again, if someone has tried everything, I think it's a great sort of next step, because we always talk about what you should eat, but a lot of times we never really talked when you should eat and what window should you eat in. And we can talk about that. I don't think there's a perfect window per se. I think it's the window that fits your lifestyle. And that's the most important one, because then you can do it consistently day in, day out. And, you know, as far as benefits, I think it just depends. I like to use it for people who plateau per se. So like I said, if you've been trying a lot of things and you're like, God, I'm just not getting the results that I want, I think fasting is a great tool to add in. You know, let's say you've cleaned up your eating and you're like, God, I'm still, you know, that was sort of me. I cleaned up my eating. I got 40 years old and wow, it's just not as easy to maybe look the way I looked before, feel the way I felt before. And so that sort of spurred me into fasting. And it turned back the clock a bit, I think.
I love that. That's so awesome. Yeah. So what prompted you to get into it? I mean, obviously you said what you were doing wasn't working. So where did you first hear about it and decide to implement it?
Well, it really was from a client of mine. She was actually pre-diabetic. So she had high insulin and she was not going down a good path. She just did her own research and started doing it and started doing some extended fasts as well, which is, you know, not for everybody, but she wanted to, you know, sort of get some great results. And she did, and all her blood levels came back to normal. And she kept talking about it. I'm getting older. I'll give it a go. And I just remember the first time I tried fasting, I think I went to go like golf. I would say if you're first trying it out, maybe just stay busy, but maybe just don't. I think I was on the golf course. I'm like, God, I'm pretty hungry. So there's definitely like an adjustment period. So a client of mine spurred me on and I just sort of took it from there.
I love that you mentioned the adjustment period, because I'm sure that you've heard this time and time again. I know that I have as well. People are like, well, I tried that, but I was starving. This happened. I felt terrible, etc. Well, I mean, we kind of have to think of fasting kind of like going into the gym and lifting weights. If you've never gone in and lifted weights, you're not going to go in and deadlift 300 pounds. That's just not how it works, right? And it's the same thing with our body. We have to kind of train our body. And so there's a great approach to that. And what's your take on all of that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I coach that you should definitely ease yourself into fasting if you've never done it. And I like to say, you know, take that, whatever that first meal is, maybe push it back a half hour, an hour. You know, some people like to go cold turkey. They're like, oh, I'll just skip and keep going. But I would say for most people, push it back gradually. And then you just sort of start to realize that, you know, maybe these hunger cues, I'm not really hungry. It's just, it's based off the time that I'm just used to eating. So when you start pushing your meals into a certain window, you realize that, you know, you have control over when you want to eat. You're not sort of controlled by perhaps like the clock.
I love that. Yeah. So do you recommend, I know for me, what I've found is that with my clients, I like to recommend they start working towards getting fat adapted first, because I find a lot of people are consuming large amounts of sugar. And when I say sugar, I'm not talking Snickers bars and all of that. I'm talking carbohydrates like, you know, rice cakes and breakfast cereal, granola, you name it, all that kind of stuff. People don't realize that that is a sugar too. And so I've found when I start removing that first and then start having people extend their eating, like lower their eating window and extend their fasted time, that I see more results. Mm-hmm. Is that how you kind of try to tackle it, or what's your technique as far as that goes?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's the most optimal technique, because I think it'll make the fasting part easier. You know, if you have a piece of cake and then you go try to fast, it's just not going to be easy. Your insulin and blood sugar is going to drop and you're going to sort of, you know, get hangry, as they say. And it's just going to make it more difficult. So yes, in an ideal world, if you can clean up your eating, like you mentioned, cut out a lot of the refined carbs, vegetable oils, things like that. And then, you know, switch that into, obviously, you know, maybe some, if you're going to have carbs, maybe some carbs that aren't so, you know, refined, and get into eating, maybe making protein the staple of your meals, because it's very satiating and you're going to be able to fast longer and get into it. Yeah. So it makes everything easier. But you know, some people don't want to change their eating habits. And so I think it can be just almost just as effective to shrink that eating window. And even if they want to eat when they want to eat, that's fine. I think if you take one thing at a time and just focus on it, I think that's most important.
I like that, because I think sometimes people kind of get overwhelmed in the monotony of things and they overdo the details rather than just focusing on one thing and getting started with it. So I definitely like that. And I definitely have clients in my own following that they like to, you know, they still eat carbs and stuff, obviously clean, unrefined processed carbs, but they eat carbs yet they fast, because that still is kind of effective as far as your body burning its own fat for fuel and understanding how to change its fuel sources.
Yeah. And yet, you know, changing your body's fuel sources, this could take time as well. Like you said, like, I was just interviewing a coach from the fasting method, Dr. Terry Lance, and she's like, yeah, usually it could take people up to a month to realize that. I think that it's sort of, you just got to listen to your body. And if you can just take maybe one meal and maybe just, maybe reduce the carbs a little bit and introduce some fat and protein, and that'll help the process of get fat adapted along with obviously doing some fasting.
I like that. So yeah. Obviously, slowly extending your eating window, and it's a lot easier than most people think. I know for myself and my clients, I usually will start them out with like an 8-16. So 8 hours is their eating window, 16 hours fasted. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, like an 8-16 or 16-8. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 8 hour eating window is a good place to start. You know, let's just say it's from noon to 8 or from 10 to 6. I always say a good rule of thumb is you don't want to eat right when you get up, right? Cortisol levels are high. And so I would say a good rule of thumb is if you're going to start eating, don't eat right away and then pick a time to stop. and that could be 8 o'clock. That could be 7 o'clock. Cause you want to give your body some time to digest. And typically if you're eating late at night, your body is going to be, that same food that let's say you would have in the middle of the day, your body's not going to respond the same to that. And you'll get probably higher insulin levels from that. So I would say, yes, a 16-8 is a good place to start. And you can do 3 meals within that 8 hour. I always thought, I was like, well, now how many meals am I going to have? And then I was like, I remember being confused at first. And then it just got to the point where I was like, you know, just 2 meals is doable within that eating window. And yeah, I mean, I don't even think about restricting calories at all. Like what I find, I don't know about you, Connie, but when I got into fasting, you end up not eating as much. You don't need, you get full faster and you get satisfied and you don't need to eat more.
And that is one thing I love, and it can be a good and bad thing. I feel like, I think if somebody has a lot of weight to lose, then, you know, cool. I think though, for myself, whereas I'm a high performing athlete, I need to be intaking a certain amount of food. And so for that reason, I track, because I find when I'm in ketosis or I'm fasting that I'm just not hungry and I don't really care about food. And I love being fasted. I feel so great. I have so much energy. My brain is clear. I get so much work done. And so then I'm just like, I'll eat a meal like at like 10 or 11 or 12, whenever I get around to it, I'll eat that meal. And then I'm like, ah, the brain power is gone. I feel so weighed down. It's just like, it's such a, it's a double-edged sword, because I love to do it so much that I probably do it too much. And I have to be like, okay, Connie, you're getting an X amount of protein today and X amount of fats and carbs, and you better fit it in, you know, and I don't care when I fit it in, but it has to be in my eating window. So, that's one place where you have to be a little bit careful, because you feel so dang great when you're fasting, you have a tendency to take it, or at least for myself, I have a tendency to take it overboard.
Yeah. I mean, especially like you said, you're very active. You're a high performing, you know, athlete. So yeah, it depends. I'm the same way a little bit. Like I always, I interview a lot of experts and they talk about protein. Well, how much protein? You usually hear about a gram per body weight. Well, I used to, when I wasn't eating meat, which was a few years ago, I had trouble getting there. Now I've introduced high quality grass-fed, grass-finished meat, and that's helped. But still, I probably don't get to that amount. So it can be difficult. I try to consume is, you know, a decent amount of protein when I'm eating it. I think what it does make you do when you only have a meal or two a day is you really have to focus in on having quality foods, because you got that one shot.
Absolutely.
You know, so no more deep dish pizza, and you're going to want to have, you're going to want to, like, you know, refuel with something that's satiating, nutrient dense, and things like that. So
when you break a fast, Brian, what does your meal usually look like?
Yeah. So, it's a good question. I used to have like a salad, like in the middle of the day, I used to have this big salad, maybe put some protein on it, but I actually found that weighed me down a little bit, even though obviously you hear like salads, you know, technically it's not like a refined carb, but mm-hmm. it would weigh me down a bit, like you mentioned. And so I actually try to sort of, if I'm going to have any carbs, I actually backload them towards the end of the day. And I like to have something lighter as far as just like protein or fat. So this could be like an omelet, you know, scrambled eggs, and maybe, you know, maybe I'll put some lox in there, avocado. I would say maybe some, I don't do a ton of dairy, but maybe some cottage cheese. So I'll break it with that. And like you mentioned, you don't want to sort of feel brought down in the middle of the day, especially when you get into this rhythm of fasting. And so that was a shift that I made, is that if I'm going to have carbs, I'll just have it towards the end of the day, because I don't do that many productive things later, and is not as many, I guess.
That's funny that you say that. So I'm very similar. When I break a fast, I'm sure people that follow me on Instagram are like, holy cow, this chick eats so much food. How in the heck does she keep this physique that she has? You know, I'm by no means a shredded bodybuilder anymore, but I feel like I keep myself up pretty well. And I eat like, I'll eat a bunch of steak and eggs and cheese and like so many eggs. I mean, my average breakfast has 4 to 5 eggs in it, and then some kind of other protein source, some kind of meat. But yeah, I'll always have these giant, just like you said, with avocado and steak and eggs is like amazing. Yeah. And it's a great way to break a fast, because you're not, you know, after you get that cellular turnover, you're not introducing a bunch of garbage right back in when your body's most likely to absorb it.
Yeah. No, and I would say some of that starting fasting as well. I think it's good to start with something that's lighter, a little easier to digest, especially if they've never done it before. I would say like a bone broth or some type of soup is a great way to sort of break the fast and just wake up the digestive system. Obviously, if you're doing some extended fasting, then for sure you want to, you know, maybe break it with like a bone broth.
I love that. Now, how do you feel, speaking of bone broth, about people getting into fasting by maybe doing some bone broth fasting, things like that? Because for some people, obviously we talked about this, jumping into fasting can be really difficult, but there are other methods that you can kind of use, because fasting is really great for your digestion and everything. So how do you feel about bone broth fasts and things like that?
Yeah, actually, I had another guy from the fasting method that I interviewed. This guy, Larry Diamond, lost a ton of weight, and I haven't published his interview yet, but he does uses a lot of bone broth fasts, and, you know, there's a lot of minerals in there and things like that that can help spur you on through a fast. So I would say, yeah, if that's something that you want to give a go, give it a go. I don't do it a ton with my clients. You know, my thing is, at least for me, like a little bit can lead to more. So I guess at least for myself and my clients, I try to be careful around the fact that, you know, for example, like people like, let's just say they want Diet Coke or something, you know, that sweetness can just spur more hunger on. So I just think, you know, obviously bone broth is not like drinking Diet Coke, you know, a lot of minerals, electrolytes, things like that. So it can work, especially just a plain one. But I just think anytime you add in any flavor, it can sort of, you know, spur on eating and make the fasting more difficult.
Absolutely. I would agree with you on that, especially in the Diet Coke realm, right? Like you see people, they're like, well, I'm having black coffee, but then they put some kind of artificial sweetener in it. Well, a lot of people don't realize that artificial sweeteners, especially in diet sodas and stuff like that, cause a cephalic insulin response. So then you're fasted, you have nothing on board, your blood sugar is stable, you get this insulin response, and then there's nothing for this insulin to take care of. So then your blood sugar drops. So then what does your body do? It gets crazy hungry and it that craves all of the worst things because it's trying to get instant energy in order to bring that blood sugar back up to a stable place. So a lot of people don't realize that when they're drinking these sodas and all these things, that it's actually being detrimental to their hunger signaling.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would say the only things that I add in for fasting is I'll make myself like a cold brew, like a black coffee from time to time. But one of the things I like to do as well is I like to work out in a fasted state. I used to like always think I needed to have something before a workout. What about you, Connie? I know you work out early, so you're definitely fasted.
Yeah, right? I can't even tell you the last time I worked out with food on board, honestly, Brian. And I mean, I guess if I end up working out later in the day, then I have something in my system, which has kind of been a thing lately because I'm doing two-a-days because I'm a difficult person to deal with as far as dealing with myself goes, because I want to be a bodybuilder, but I want to be an endurance cyclist. And so there's a little bit of a clash of the titans going on right now with that. So right now I'm doing two-a-days at the gym. I don't recommend that for everybody. And if you do decide to go down that route, you need to have a skilled coach to help you, because adrenal management is really important as far as overdoing it that way. So I do, though, later in the day, if I'm doing fasted cardio workouts or whatever, I sometimes will end up having food on board because of the way it falls in the day. So, but you know, circling back, even when I'm cycling, not indoors, I guess, in the summertime, I prefer to be completely fasted. And the longer I'm fasted, the better I perform. And that might seem crazy, but when you don't have a bunch of glycogen in your system, your body doesn't produce lactic acid. So you're not getting that. I mean, all of us at one point in our lives have gone for a run or a walk or a hike, and you get that lactic acid buildup. Your legs feel heavy. They're burning. Like, it's a horrible feeling, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't get that buildup when you are fasted. And so I actually prefer to work out fasted as well.
Yeah, I do too as well. I was going to say that since the whole quarantine went on, I pushed my workouts more like midday, early afternoon, and I'll work out in a fasted state, and then I'll break my fast afterwards. Not to say that you need to eat right after you work out, but you know, I usually wait a little bit, but maybe half hour, hour. It's sort of like a reward. I don't know. It's like, okay, you fasted, you worked out. Okay, I can eat. I like that. I've gotten into that rhythm and I enjoy that.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, better focus overall when you're fasted in a fasted state, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk a little bit about fasting times and intervals. There is so much information out there on the internet, on podcasts. Some people say you should do only intermittent fasting 2 days to a week. Some people say once a month. And then you got people saying do an extended fast, like 3 to 5 days every 6 months to a year. How do you feel about all that information?
Well, I mean, there's a lot out there, and I don't think necessarily, you know, it's not all right and it's not all wrong. I think it just depends on what your goals and why you're fasting. You know, if you're fasting, let's say you're pre-diabetic and, you know, maybe, you know, you're obese and you need to take some action, then you're going to take different steps than perhaps, I don't know, someone else who has 10% body fat and they just want to just sort of lean out a little bit. So I think it just depends, you know, as far as fasting windows is, I mean, like you said, I think a good rule of thumb is to just start with that 16-8 and go from there. Like for me, it's sort of evolved over time. And now I'm probably about, you know, I would say I'm in a fasted state for 20. And then I have like about a 4-hour eating window. And then I fluctuate that. And then I would say that extended fasts, I think, are good to do every once in a while. You know, obviously fasting is a stressor, so you don't want to overdo it. And you sort of got to monitor how you're feeling. But yeah, like I don't do crazy. Like I've done a couple day fasts. I'll do those maybe every few months. Just to sort of, you know, push it a little bit. But, you know, I only recommend extended fast for people who've probably done, let's say, 16-8 or 24 for at least, you know, a few months until you get into any extended fasts. But with any of it, like I said, it is a bit of a stressor, and you just got to monitor your sleep and other things and your stress and make sure that, you know, you're on board and ready to go.
Absolutely. So circling back to that just a little bit, you know, originally when I was in the bro science end of things a little bit more, the bro mentality, yeah, I would think, oh my God, if I fast, I'm losing muscle. Like right now, I'm already losing muscle. I would get so afraid, right? But here's the thing people don't realize is, like, after an extended fast, of course you're going to lose some muscle. And I don't know how you feel about this. You can chime in at any point, but, of course you're going to lose some muscle, but when you do an extended fast, there's an extreme amount of cellular autophagy. And when that happens, your body releases a lot of growth hormone and begins to heal a lot of things. And so a lot of these people, even people that are in extremely good shape, they will lose muscle. Like, I'm not going to say that doesn't happen, but several months down the road, they end up actually gaining more than they lost because of the huge growth hormone response to fasting.
Right. No, you're spot on with that. I mean, I think that, I'll just tell you this. I did a small little breather micro podcast for myself. I took a DEXA scan in the beginning of the year and then, you know, got more into fasting. Well, I was in fasting before that, but for the whole year, I ended up putting on muscle. And I've done more fasting this year than any other year. So you can build muscle and fast. Yeah, if you do an extended fast, you're probably going to lose a little bit of muscle. It's just going to happen. But like you said, it's the long-term benefits that you're looking for. You know, the short term, yeah, maybe in the short term, you might lose a little bit, but you're also going to lose some fat. You're going to get into autophagy. You're going to have, you know, you're going to sort of, I mean, I think fasting spiritually wise is just a great thing in the sense that, you know, abstaining from food, you know, is, you know, it sort of humbles you. It makes you realize that, you know, you don't always need to eat. And, you know, there's a lot of people who don't have a choice whether they can eat or not. So I just think it's like mentally just such a great sort of, it can build you up, you know, it just makes you stronger. And so, yeah, no, you're right on with all that. And I was going to say something else and I forgot.
Well, so, you know, circling back here, Brian, you know, and I don't know how, what the truth is to this, but I was actually reading something at one point that said back in the day, like all of these major scholars like Plato and Socrates and all these people that are well looked at even now, they used to require that their students came to class fasted because their brain state was in a sharper, their brain was in just a sharper state.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we both can agree on that, right?
100%.
I mean, yes. You know, you eat food and, you know, your digestive system and all your blood flow is flowing in to digest that food. And that's sort of, you get a crash. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of people who have lunch and then crash after they eat. And so, you know, I think the main thing to do also is to, if someone's listening, they're like, well, I don't know if I want to get into fasting. Well, I would say a good starting point, we haven't talked about it, is just how about no snacking? You know, just have, if you want three meals, have three meals. You know, if you want it at 8 a.m., 12 and 6. But if you can just eliminate snacking, I think that can go a long way.
I love that idea. And that's a great thing. I don't know why I haven't said that before to people. You know, it is kind of funny, though, when I do work on people's meal guidelines, they're always like, when do you want, like, I'll put a snack in there, but I'm usually like, I would add that to your meal somewhere or however you see fit. And they're like, well, shouldn't I be eating five meals a day? And I'm like, no, not really.
Yeah, I know. I was the same way. I used to think I have to eat all day. If I had an inkling of hunger, and I've said it before, I used to grab like those Kind bars and eat those. But yeah, once you eliminate snacking, I think it can just go a long way. And it, you know, we're all fast. We all do fasting, right? Cause we're fast overnight. So we all can do it. And you think you wake up and you'd be really hungry, right? Cause you've, you know, but your body's an amazing instrument. And if you go without food, not only do you have a lot of hormonal benefits, but also you realize that, you know, you don't need to eat all the time. You can have plenty of energy. You can work out and do a lot of different things.
Absolutely. And I want to touch on something you said right there, and you may not be the person to ask, but maybe you do know. How do you feel about fasting and digestion? You mentioned digestion back there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like my area of expertise per se, but a lot of times, if you give yourself time to heal without eating anything, well, I would say your body's going to heal itself for a lot of different things. And you can talk about digestion. And one of the things is, I would say that for most people, they have digestive issues because of the things that they're eating. So if they take a break from that, they're going to be feeling a lot better. And a lot of disease and things like that start from the gut. So that's why fasting can be so like beneficial in the sense that you're letting your gut heal. And it's going to sort of do repairs on things that, that need it. So huge for gut health for sure. And it's a great first step.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, so are there any other tips that you can give my listeners as far as getting started with fasting? Maybe some tricks that can help get them started?
Yeah, I would say that, well, my first tip would be that whatever their first meal is, let's just say push it back an hour and do that for a week. And then once they get that down, they can keep pushing it back. So that would be a first tip. Another tip would be that no snacking. So, and they're like, oh my God, I want to snack. I mean, nowadays there's so many snacks for any type of eating, right? You got the carnivore snacks, you got keto. I mean, keto, how many keto snacks are there out there? It's like,
It's crazy.
it is a little crazy. I mean, the thing about it is, we're always going to be fed all this stuff, and there's always going to be food on every corner. And nowadays, people are delivering, you can get anything you want at your doorstep because you know what? No one makes any money when you fast. So it's never really going to be truly mainstream. So you got to have a little bit of self-discipline. But, cutting out snacking can go such a long way. And I like to say, try some sparkling water. I know it's boring. Sparkling water, tea, or coffee, use those as instruments, as ways to sort of get through those times where maybe you're used to snacking. And when I do extended fast, I think sparkling water is great because it sort of like fills you up. I never used to like sparkling water until I started fasting.
Yeah, I think the carbonation definitely has something to do with making you feel more satiated. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then the other big thing is just, having nutrient dense meals, whole unprocessed foods really goes a long way and will help you fast. I mean, my wife and I, we cook pretty much every day. Because we both, well, I've been working from home and for the most part she has as well. And so, yeah, if you can, I know you had Dr. Bill Schindler on, right? I saw that.
He's
And
awesome.
he's great. And talk about just like making everything, or not making everything, but making like just a lot of different things, a lot of different foods that can go a long way. And you start cooking and you realize you don't need to put all this stuff in foods, and instead of ordering in, it makes a big difference in health.
Absolutely. And the stuff I watch on his Instagram, I'm just like, oh my gosh, will you bring that to me? It looks so good. He was making pork rinds yesterday and it was so
Oh.
fun to watch how he did it. And like the pork rind was way better than any you'd ever see in a bag. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just want to dip that thing in some cheese. It looks so good.
Yeah, I got to go back on there. I just got some grass-fed liver, and I've never done it before. So, have you ever prepared liver?
Yeah, so we are avid hunters, and so every year we shoot an elk or a deer or some kind of critter to eat. And so typically, yeah, like the liver, we just shot an elk this fall, and the liver was huge. It was like the biggest liver I've ever seen, healthiest liver I've ever seen. And it's really, really, my husband, he loves to just cook it straight up. I'm not as much of a liver fan. He'll cook it right straight up. And
So cook it straight up, meaning like grill it or no?
he'll slice it and just saute it with some onions
Saute.
and butter
Okay.
and maybe some garlic sometimes. But yeah, it's just super simple to cook it up that way. I have a little bit of a texture issue when it comes to liver. And the funny thing is I know how good it is for you. It has so many amazing health benefits. And so what I did is with all of our organ meats, I typically try to just grind them right into the ground meat so that they're in there, but then I don't really notice that they're there.
Okay. You blend it up. Yeah. Yep. I've bought blends before. I've never blended my own, but I've also heard with liver that you want to soak it. Does he soak it in anything like milk or not? Okay.
No, we don't soak our livers. The one that we do soak is heart when we eat it. So that one we usually do soak, but just in some water with some salt in it. We don't soak it in any kind of milk or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, I'll report back with how it goes.
Yeah. If you want to dive into organ meats, honestly, the best place to start is chicken hearts. And I know that might sound a little bit crazy, but you can go to your health food store and buy just like a package of chicken hearts and just get some garlic and some butter and saute those babies up and eat them. They actually taste pretty good. And it's a great gateway organ meat, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done heart actually. And that actually came out, it was like the texture was a little rougher but like it was like a beef tenderloin. I mean, it was good.
Well, and that was one amazing thing going back to Dr. Bill, but he talks about that in the podcast I did with him is in other countries, they don't give a crud about the muscle meat. They all value the organs because they're so nutrient dense. And he said, that's where us as Americans, we don't value nutrient density. And so we're not looking because we don't have to, we're not looking for the most nutrient dense food. We're just picking up whatever is accessible. Whereas in tribes and things like that, they have to look at what is going to benefit their health the most and what's going to keep them going for the longest. So he said they treat in most tribes, the organ meats are like gold. They treat them like they're the highest of high food that they can get. And then the muscle meat, they just get in there and they chop it up and they throw it in a bucket and that's it. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. And they drink blood.
Yeah.
Right. Did he talk about that?
Okay. Yeah. There are tribes out there that do that. And it's really incredible.
Blood and milk.
Yeah.
Yep. Blood and raw milk.
Yeah. Because they see them as a renewing resource. Right. So they do not kill the animal to drink the blood. They actually just draw the blood out of it, drink it. Same thing with milk. It's a renewable resource. And so they're not killing the animals. They just use them for their resources.
Makes sense.
Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. You know, it would take some getting used to, that's for sure. But we're awful spoiled in a sense.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So yeah, so you know, you kind of said something back there, and you know, we'll get a little off topic now because I think we covered a lot. But you used to not eat a lot of meat, and then that changed. So I always get interested in asking these questions because I speak with so many people that were like not really big meat eaters, vegan, vegetarian, things like that. And at the time, they thought that it was really great for their health until they did it for some time, and they realized that they just weren't feeling as good as they thought that they could.
Yeah. Yeah. For a while I was like a pescatarian. So, you know, I would have fish and then a lot of veggies and things like that. I just sort of made the change. I went into pescatarian because I think I watched a video, like a PETA video on, you know, animal cruelty, and you know, I love animals. And so I think that was the main reason I went that way. And doing it for a few years, I realized just being really active and stuff, I wasn't getting the results, and it just wasn't getting the results I wanted. I felt like it was very tough to get enough protein. I started looking up some quality meats out there that, you know, that raise their animals in a sustainable, humane way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of, you know, the way I justified it. And then I also actually, you know, read some carnivore books and started learning about, you know, just how nutrient dense animals are and what we can get from it. And so, yeah, just got in. I think I started ordering right around when the quarantine started, like Force of Nature is a company that I've used, and just sort of went from there, started having their blends and things like that. And it's definitely, like I said, it's helped me put on muscle for sure. No doubt about it, because it really helped up my protein intake, along with obviously other benefits like B vitamins and iron and things like that, and creatine and things like that.
Absolutely. And I tell people get so afraid of red meat because Western medicine tells them to be, which is crazy. But, you know, a lot of that stuff, there's a lot of compounds that you can only get out of red meat. So if you're just eating chicken and fish and, you know, seafood and stuff like that, you know, you're not going to be getting all of the nutrients and minerals and the micronutrients. That's something that a lot of people don't talk about, but you're not getting a lot of that unless you're eating red meat.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to mix it up between that and like wild salmon is, you know, cause I had, Marty Kendall, I interviewed Marty Kendall. Fish is very, very nutrient dense as well. So you can get away with it. I would say if you're a full on vegetarian, it's probably very difficult to hit the amount of protein that you would need. Mm-hmm. Especially as you age, right? Sarcopenia and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's that much more important, I find, just from my own research and just interviewing experts, is, you know, make protein the staple of your meals. And if you're a vegetarian, it can be, you know, I don't know how, you know, hemp protein, pea protein, there's only so much you can do there.
Right. And a lot of people don't realize that plant proteins more often than not don't have the complete amino acid sequences to actually help you build your cells and repair and recover and all these things. So it's really the bioavailability of it is just not there.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So, well, awesome, Brian. What would you leave us with as far as this podcast goes? What is your biggest takeaway? Obviously, you said not snacking is a great thing, but you know, if you could get any one thing out in the world, what would it be?
Oh my God, a lot of pressure. And it's funny because I asked my guests the same thing or very similar thing. If I could get one thing out in the world, well, since it is on fasting, I would say if you've never done it, to give it a go and get out of, you know, you just want to get out of your comfort zone. I think that's what it's really about. Cause when it comes down to it, it is a mental game. It really is. And eating is a mental game. Hunger cues are a mental game. And I think that if you just give it a go, you know, give yourself a month. And if you're still not where you're at, then you can always adjust. But I would just say abstain from food and see how you feel and go from there. But it does take time. And I would just say a lot of it's just all in your mind. So I guess that would be my one thing is if you've never done it, give it a go. First of all, you're safe. I love the fact that you can save time. You save money. It gives you flexibility. You know, if you, for example, I just traveled a little bit. I went to Florida, had to get out of Chicago in the winter. So went to Florida and I had a flight. I fasted that day. It's like, you know, you're traveling. Do you really want to eat airplane food? You know, you don't. Everyone else around you is eating that stuff and it's such junk. So it really just gives you that flexibility. And it's something that I would recommend for everybody.
I love that you said that right there, the flexibility part. That's a big thing because like, I mean, especially for me, like cycling, like the last race I did took 9 hours and everybody else was stopping to eat or eating while they were riding. And I didn't have to pack a bunch of food or nothing. I just went for it and it was great. So I love that. And I love the airplane thing too. I try not to eat anything in airports or on airplanes, especially because I mean, point blank, first of all, the food is nasty. Second of all, the environment is nasty. Who wants to get food out in that area and eat it? No, thanks. I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays they don't even, you know, I guess it's a good thing. They don't really serve food anymore on planes unless you're probably flying international. So, you know, they might give you a little packet of peanuts or, you know, but that's about it.
Well, Brian, it was really great to reconnect with you, have you come on my show. Again, I'm so thankful for the circle of people that I'm surrounded with because I love meeting these people and staying in connection with them all the time. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, no, thanks, Connie. And I'm glad I got on your podcast. I love it. You have a lot of great guests. And I'll definitely keep listening. So thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So where can my listeners find you?
They can go to briangrin.com and everything will be on there. I'm getting a little bit of a website overview, but not overview, overhaul, I would say, And then I also have a fasting challenge, which eases you into fasting. So it's a 21daysfastingchallenge.com. And yeah, it's just a great way to get started. You sort of journal every day, get daily emails and accountability, and it'll ease you into the fast. So
I love that. I think that's awesome. You know, finding support to when you want to start trying something new is a really super important thing. And I love that there's guys like you out there doing stuff like that and making it available to people, because you never know when that one little challenge you sign up for sets you down this road that's such a better path, you know?
Yeah. And you talk about support, also I would know one other quick tip is, you know, if you're going to get into fasting, you don't need to tell people that you think aren't going to be supportive of it, because there are people that are going to be like, they're going to pretty much think you're crazy. Mm-hmm. So only tell people who you think are going to be supportive, and that makes it a lot easier.
Everybody thinks I'm crazy, so I'm okay with that. You know, it's like, you wouldn't believe the things that I'm sure you hear a lot of it, but it's like when I don't let my kids eat a bunch of garbage all the time, people think that I'm like killing them.
Yeah, right.
It's like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm trying to set them up for success in their life later on. I don't want them to have diabetes and heart conditions and be on all these medications. I'm looking out for them right now. The end game is in my vision now. And I get attacked about that. So I understand completely.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Well, Brian, it's been a pleasure. I'll put all your information in the show notes so my listeners can go find it and maybe sign themselves up for that 21-day fasting challenge and give it a try and implement it into their journey.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Connie.
Well, friends, thank you again so much for joining me. I'm really appreciative of it, as always. I'm really excited because next week, I believe I will be having an episode with Sonia Spill. She is an expert on all things sex, and I know that seems crazy to talk about on air, but it is an extremely important subject, especially for women, because a lot of them don't understand the mechanisms and things behind it and actually how healthy it can be. So Sonia and I are going to dive into all of that, which is super exciting, and that is next Monday. You won't want to miss that one. It will not be one you want to listen to in the car with your kids. So make sure that you set aside some time next Monday to catch up with Sonia and I. Until then, we'll see you next time.